Welcome to the Better Wellbeing podcast series, brought to you by Legal & General Group Protection. I'm Suzanne Clarkson, an internal communication expert and founder of Coach House Communications. And in today's communication clinic, I'm going to look at the foundations of workplace wellbeing and at how leadership communication is the key to new ways of working success. Apparently, nearly a third of small to medium-sized businesses, or SMEs, plan to redesign their wellbeing strategy this year to better align with new ways of working. This comes from Legal & General Group Protection's Wellbeing at Work Barometer, annual research that aims to find out what UK businesses and employees really want and need when it comes to wellbeing. It helps Legal & General design appropriate products, services and support. By new ways of working, we're talking here about work location, whether that be remote, on-site, or a combination of the two, so-called hybrid working. We're not necessarily talking about flexibility around hours. And of course, we need to be mindful of the fact that many people simply don't have any such options open to them. Wellbeing strategy needs to be revisited regularly to fit with changing business and people needs. And in keeping with the theme of this podcast series, I'm going to focus on the foundational layer when it comes to wellbeing. And that applies wherever employees are located. I'm going to look at the role of communication as part of that foundational layer in creating the conditions for wellbeing. Workplaces usually have lots of different communication channels available to them, anything from town halls and lunch and learns to social channels, even news in the loos, highly effective, so I'm told. Legal & General Group Protection's HR Communication Toolkit, which accompanies this series, helps employers look at channels as part of a communication plan, what works, when and how. Probably the most important channel though, the one I'm going to focus on in this episode, is leadership. By that I mean line managers as well as the senior exec. Leadership communication and behaviours represent a key factor in whether new ways of working will work, or traditional ways for that matter. And when I'm talking about leadership communication, I'm not talking about the traditional type of communication that starts at the top and gets dribbled or, to use the corporate term, cascaded down. You know the type of thing, the classic hierarchical style of communication where leadership tells people how it is, where big decisions are made behind big closed doors and then internal comms is used as the medium to sell those decisions to everyone else. There's still a place for that, but it's very one way and focused only on dispersing information. But information isn't necessarily understanding. These days, that top-down approach needs to be balanced with something more two-way and bottom-up. It's about getting employees much more involved and giving people a voice. Because it's that bottom-up aspect, an aspect associated with motivation and inspiration, that contributes greatly to well-being and all the good stuff that comes with that for business too, in terms of productivity. Wellbeing can't be done to people. Employees can't be fed it. They need to feel it. It needs to come from within. But the vast majority of thinking around wellbeing, thinking revealed in articles and reports, centres around doing wellbeing to people through awareness days, education and initiatives. Rather than supporting people to feel a sense of wellbeing through the foundational aspects such as good work design that allows for control and autonomy, and good management practices that help build trust and motivation. Instead, the most commonly quoted forms of wellbeing support are surface layer things like webinars, workshops, wellbeing information and education, even training mental health first aiders and allowing mental health days on top of annual leave. All of this has a place, but it's all above the surface. On its own, it's going to struggle to improve wellbeing. To improve wellbeing, all the surface level stuff needs to sit on strong foundations. If there's a mismatch between the messages coming from the foundational layer and those coming from the surface layer, you can end up creating more problems than you solve. For instance, where organisations do lunchtime yoga or mindfulness sessions, for example, but where at the same time, punishing work schedules mean that people then have to work later to make up the time lost, where's the sense in that? Or when someone takes a mental health day but then goes straight back to the toxic environment they were trying to get some respite from the very next day, It's just madness. Then there's this supposedly new phenomenon of quiet quitting now, where people just do the bare minimum and slowly withdraw from work. But is this really news? Hasn't this been a feature in workplaces up and down the land for like forever? After working in-house for large companies for many years, prior to going it alone, I'd say quiet quitting was always there. It just hadn't been highlighted as a thing with a catchy name on TikTok. But the fact that it has captured the zeitgeist shouldn't be ignored. It could mean that a lot of employees are feeling overworked, unhappy, and disengaged right now. The breadcrumb trails from all of this lead back to one place, the foundations of all organisations. The work design, the management style, also the stuff that underpins those things, the policies and practices. Of course, there's much more to this than one 15-minute podcast can ever hope to cover. So I'm going to focus on the one thing that businesses could start to change today, the one thing that could arguably have the biggest impact, and that's the leadership role in building employee trust, the behaviours and communication style needed. Trust has a pivotal role to play, because when it comes to well-being, as with most things in life, trust trumps tokenism, hands down. It's like this: would I rather have open and honest conversations with my partner, or would I rather communicate with him on a kind of need-to-know basis and receive the occasional bunch of flowers as a reinforcer of trust? Well, a bunch of flowers once in a while wouldn't go amiss, but no, the former, obviously, open and honest conversation. The same goes for the workplace. Leadership behaviours still represent the top reason why people leave a job. Pay and benefits in second place, according to research by Ipsos. Good and supportive management behaviour rests on open and honest communication. Yet there hasn't been much change in getting communication right, says Ipsos. Leadership communication has a central role to play in creating the right conditions for trust. And where there's trust, there's employee voice. People are more inclined to share knowledge, experience, concerns, questions, mistakes, and even half-formed ideas, and more inclined to do so as part of everyday working life, not just in formal brainstorms or annual one-to-ones. I don't know about anyone else, but formal brainstorms and one-to-ones have never done anything for my well-being. Quite the opposite, in fact. Trust leads to employee voice, which is defined as intentionally expressing work-related ideas, information, and opinions. And where there's voice, there's collaboration, contribution, and challenge. There's much more involvement of employees in strategic decision-making, and as a result of that, there's employee engagement. And with employee engagement comes well-being. Countless studies have proven these connections. Take a look at the Engage for Success website or CIPD briefing papers if you want more information. So, going back to that stat at the start, from Legal and General Group Protection's Wellbeing at Work Barometer, that a third of SMEs are planning to redesign their wellbeing strategy to better align with new ways of working. I've set out the case for giving the foundational layer a focus, and I've explained why trust, as part of this foundational layer, is so important when it comes to well-being. Now I'm going to take a look at what's needed in the leadership toolbox to help create the conditions for trust. And I've grouped these into three areas. First, set the stage. Just now I touched on how trust makes people more inclined to share mistakes. Absolutely key to trust is reframing failure. Viewing failure in the way that air traffic controllers certainly do, or perhaps a big tech company might, as something that allows for continued learning and improvement. In doing this, you're clarifying the need for voice. Leaders also need to emphasise the organisation's purpose. When talking about anything to do with strategy, identify what's at stake, why it matters, and for whom. Perhaps even revisit purpose and check its fit for the future, in line with new ways of working. It needs to be compelling and consistent, clearly stating a reason for the organisation's existence, something that everyone can trust and get behind and feel motivated by. In the words of Simon Sinek, not what the organisation does, but why it does it. This can be reinforced through leadership role modelling. So if the purpose of an organisation is to, say, inspire the next generation about something. Leadership could be role modelling, openness, honesty, humility, and encouraging input into business decisions from the front line and new recruits. People feel inspired through a genuine sense of involvement and ownership. Next thing in the toolkit, invite participation and respond productively. I've touched on this already. It's about leaders demonstrating humility, acknowledging gaps in their knowledge, asking good questions and modelling really good listening. Listening shouldn't be confined to a once-a-year engagement survey followed by a management-led action plan. That's a useful temperature check, but it needs to be supplemented with day-to-day ways of encouraging employee voice to help shape assumptions at board level that influence decision-making. Encouraging this day-to-day voice is achieved by supporting leaders to have short, informal conversations at all levels, walking around and getting to know people on a human level, taking the trouble to ask about the family perhaps, offering work-related help, and just practicing genuine listening. On that note, research shows there's a direct correlation between method of communication and the percentage of employees who feel their leaders do what they say they will, in other words, trust. So face-to-face, by things like group chats, site visits, or as I've just mentioned, walking around and having informal chats, face-to-face trumps one-way or virtual, hands down. And by that I mean email, town halls, video, team calls. Yet face-to-face is still the least used method in workplaces. But how do you achieve the face-to-face experience in a remote working world? Which brings me neatly to the third and final item in the leadership toolbox: communicate in a way that speaks to emotion. Digital, email, video, even social channels all bleach out any human emotion. In contrast, when we're face to face with someone, we're constantly picking up on the emotion, the tone, intent, body language, the natural and unconscious cues that tell us what people are really saying. You can't recreate this virtually, but you can and should supplement the virtual, as well as thinking carefully how to overcome the issue of overwhelm so that people still have a chance of connecting with each other virtually. First, supplementing the virtual. So build in face-to-face opportunities, whether your people are home, hybrid, or on-site. This is key to trust and integrity. Map out these opportunities at certain times of the year, and that helps rejuvenate relationships that can then be sustained virtually. The best managers are those who take time for communication, sharing timely information, giving and inviting regular feedback, celebrating successes, involving people in decisions that affect them. So as well as building in face-to-face opportunities, there are ways to improve online and digital communications to help overcome overwhelm and foster trust. We're all so overwhelmed these days. We're all multitasking, and we're all training ourselves out of the ability to focus. How many of us are typing emails while on a Teams or Zoom call, or even just staring at ourselves? I read somewhere that we spend most of the time on video calls just looking at ourselves. Obviously, in a face-to-face scenario, we're not looking into a mirror, which means that we're much more focused and picking up on those all-important cues. We've all got such limited attention spans now, it's even got a name: attention deficit trait. This is a product of the overwhelming multitasking environment. It's marked by distractibility, inner frenzy, and impatience, and it prevents people from making smart decisions and prioritizing. According to neuroscience experts, today's overwhelm means that the emotional parts of our brains are running the show around 95% of the time. This impedes our ability to take a step back, to break our behaviour and do things like goal setting and strategic thinking, all the bits that happen in the thinking part of the brain. And if our stress response is activated, the thinking part of the brain doesn't get a look in at all, and everything is then based on an emotional response. And our brains are constantly scanning the environment for threat, for the negative in messages, to help keep us safe. So when leaders are in top-down information-only mode, which can often be the norm in virtual communication, it's important to consider that employee ability to take on information and act on it might be compromised. There are ways to counter all of this, such as stopping talking and instead asking questions, letting people make connections themselves because the brain likes a challenge. Also varying the tone and pitch in presentations, reducing the length of meetings, having regular breakouts and encouraging discussion and participation, using polls to check understanding perhaps, and following up meetings with bite-sized snippets of key information or quizzes. Also, it can be useful to send out information in advance of meetings and brainstorms to preempt what's going to be said and why, to give the deep thinkers time to reflect so they're not drowned out by the loudest voices and you end up missing potentially golden nuggets. Also have rules around what's acceptable on social channels. Ensure they're used for social bonding and living organisational purpose in stories and other narratives, as opposed to seeing the social platform as the be-all and end-all when it comes to communicating or listening. Hopefully, I haven't bamboozled you with all this. It's a bit of a whistle-stop tour into a big topic, or even a big range of topics. So, if you only remember one thing, remember this. When it comes to well-being, trust trumps tokenism. And trust in the workplace, just like in any other relationship or environment, is built on openness, honesty, and ideally, a jolly good dose of humility. For a chance to win a day's internal communication consultancy, including follow-up actions and recommendations, enter our competition now. The competition is open to SMEs employing 50 to 250 employees. For more information, go to legalandgeneral.com/betterwellbeingcompetition.